here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome to the Zach's Friday Finish Line. I'm Ryan McQueenie, a content writer here at Zach's, along with one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello. Today is Friday, October 20th. It's almost November. And we're here to recap this week's biggest stories in the investment and financial world. We're kind of starting to hit our stride here in Q3 earnings season. And later on in the show, we'll be getting you ready for next week with a preview of the upcoming report from one of our favorite restaurant companies.
Yes, I think most of our regular listeners probably already know who we're talking about there, but we'll save it as a bit of a tease. It has, of course, also been a busy week outside of earnings reports, and we're always here to cover all of the headlines that you need to know about.
But up first, in a follow-up from an earnings report that we previewed last week, we'll be taking a look at United's difficult quarter and its overall effect on the airline industry. Ryan?
Yeah, so United, one of the largest U.S. airline companies, reported third quarter earnings and revenues that beat expectations on Wednesday in the face of the recent series of tropical storms and hurricanes that forced the company to cancel thousands of flights. Of course, these were already lowered expectations for that very reason. United canceled 8,300 flights due to Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. As we will remember, Hurricane Harvey devastated the Houston area. The Houston airport is United's second largest hub. This cost the company an estimated $185 million and helped lead to an overall about a half of a percentage point decline in revenues. The company's earnings, really the bottom line, took the hit. Earnings plummeted 29.6% and net income sunk 34% year over year. United's operating expenses climbed 6% to $8.8 billion in the third quarter, and consolidated unit cost per available seat mile rose 3%. So costs going up around the board there, and the company citing higher labor expenses and fuel costs as a reason for the big jump in these specific costs. All things that we probably could have expected already, probably already did expect, and things that we touched on last week when we previewed United's report. So not necessarily anything new that surprised investors there. However, what really caused some concern throughout the entire airline space this week was United's planned response to increased competition from budget airline companies. United will reportedly bump up capacity by 3.5% in the fourth quarter in order to maintain its market share at major airport hubs. I think investors now fear that United will have a harder time boosting its bottom line as it spends more to fight off the new wave of competition. Again, that's so many new major competitors in that kind of budget space, the Spirit Airlines and the Alaska
Frontier.
Yes, all of the JetBlues of the world. These are people who have gone from kind of fringe competitors of the major airline companies to very legitimate.
Is Alaska a budget airliner, though?
Yeah, considered one.
Really?
Yeah. I think actually these days, even Southwest has lowered their ticket prices enough to earn the budget tag. And when we think of non-budget airliners now, a lot of the like international ones, and then also like United, Delta, and American are really the ones still repping the old school pricing models. But kind of as this news shows, being forced to change those old school models a little bit in the face of this new competition, bumping up capacity by 3.5%. Of course, the issue there is by bumping up capacity, you're also going to need an increase in traffic, one that would outweigh your increase in capacity if you'd like to see growth. Is United going to be able to do that? Will they be able to bounce back so quickly from the damage caused from these hurricanes? All things investors are concerned about as we head deeper into the fourth quarter. This also kind of caused some concerns from throughout the airline industry. Other large flyers such as Delta, Southwest, and American all slumped on Thursday. And overall, the U.S. Global Jets ETF, which trades under the ticker JETS, That fell about 2% on Thursday. So this was Thursday was a rough day throughout the American airline industry. It has been well documented. Airlines, domestic airlines, really struggling in the face of a lot of industry-wide problems, and United kind of underscoring all of those challenges this week. Shifting now to another company that has struggled recently, Blue Apron.
Yeah.
Understatement, maybe? Well, you'll get into it, I guess.
Yeah. So shares of Blue Apron, one of the biggest meal kit companies out there on the market today, they fell on Thursday after the company announced it would be laying off about 6% of its employees, and that equates to about 300 people. CEO Matt Salzberg described the decision as a quote-unquote company-wide realignment. So it's quite a nice way to put it. In the email, and he said that in an email to employees, Salzberg continued, quote, "Our leadership and board did not take this decision lightly, and I want to assure you that we believe it was necessary as we focus the company on future growth and achieving profitability," unquote. And according to CNBC, and they were able to cite people familiar with the matter, the layoffs affected salaried employees the most, and the company let go of a slew of workers within its marketing, software department, software development, operations, and business development decisions at its New York headquarters. But unfortunately, Blue Apron's cuts are probably no surprise to investors. They weren't really a surprise to me when I heard about it on Thursday. I don't know if they were a surprise to you. That really no surprise to investors, once again, that have been tracking the company since its kind of a mistimed IPO earlier this year. The stock is down around 47% since its debut, which was quickly overshadowed by Amazon's purchase of Whole Foods. I mean, Blue Apron announced its IPO, and then this Whole Foods announcement by Amazon, it just like knocked the food industry off its feet. And
yeah,
then
definitely.
This investor caution, this investor scrutiny became even more heightened, and Blue Apron didn't really stand a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still unprofitable, you know, still haven't made any money.
What I think is interesting too about saying that the Amazon deal really affected Blue Apron, which I definitely did, and then we kind of saw Amazon launch their own meal kits around that same time as well.
I mean, I haven't seen any marketing for it.
Right. But which probably like underscores, touching on the big problem with Blue Apron, is how much they're forced to spend on marketing to kind of stick out against that, what is now like an incredibly, incredibly crowded meal kit. We've talked about the kit economy on the show before, but meal kits specifically, it seems like everybody and their mother has a meal kit delivery company, whether it be Amazon or Kroger now is making meal kits. Albertsons just bought Plated.
Yep. HelloFresh, I mean, they're thinking about IPOing, which is, I don't know, in my opinion, could be the worst decision of the year.
Seems a little bit.
There's Sun Basket, which is strictly an organic meal kit company. There's Purple Carrot, which is like vegetarian, vegan friendly. There's Martha Stewart's. I mean, even Tom Brady doesn't have his own, but Tom Brady has like partnered with Purple Carrot.
Tom Brady with Purple Carrot. Wow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I read that somewhere. But there's literally a million meal kit companies for whatever dietary restriction you could want.
Yes.
There's one, it's called Daily Harvest. It literally does smoothies and soups.
Incredible.
Literally anything.
A liquid only diet.
Monthly subscription.
Yeah. So, and that's got to be a real problem when you think about how do you stick out in that pack. Blue Apron, I think, has chosen aggressive marketing campaigns, viral marketing, digital marketing. I think I first heard of Blue Apron through like podcast advertising, and it seems to always come up on the podcasts they listen to still.
They just launched a podcast.
Their own podcast?
Their own podcast.
That's really interesting.
About food. I think their first episode, it's in partner with someone, this one chef, and their first episode was on kale.
That's
which
interesting.
They use kale in a lot of their recipes, which I... Full disclosure, I am a Blue Apron customer. I use it every now and then. You know, girls got to stay on a budget.
True.
But, you know, it's great when I use it. It's nice not to have to go to the grocery store. But
yeah, sure. But I think that probably gets back to the Amazon Whole Foods purchase kind of overshadowing it, as if that's going to change the way grocery delivery works. Then, like, do we even need meal kits to not go to the grocery store?
Yeah.
Does the grocery store just come to me? Why do I need a niche company to do it when Amazon's already taking it care of it for me?
Right. So, I mean, in the end, like, as we were saying, like Blue Apron will likely, they should potentially seek a buyer.
Yeah.
They will like, maybe will they will likely get bought out, but they need like a big parent company if they want that.
What was the phrase? I want to go back to the phrasing that the CEO said, quote, company-wide realignment. That's, yeah, I think an interesting way to put it.
But I mean, regardless of all of this, I mean, they really changed the game. They changed the grocery game. So that, I think that is something to really look at. And I think that's something that shouldn't be lost in the shuffle, is that
definitely should not be understated.
No, Blue Apron was one of the few, like, is one of the few meal kit companies that changed the grocery game and changed how you thought and how people think about how you get groceries, how you get food, how you use food, how you cook food. And I think that's really important.
And I think we can still also agree on a couple of good things about the company, which is it's got probably in America, probably the best name recognition of all of the meal kit companies.
Yes.
HelloFresh may be up there, but with Blue Apron's online marketing, I think they're kind of the name right now in meal kit delivery. Good product. I've never really seen anything negative about the quality of the food that is being sent to people and the experience. It seems that people, on some level at least, like the experience of getting the meal kit and then preparing it themselves.
Yeah.
And then they've also seemed to have kind of a grasp on how to at least do the viral digital marketing. Whether the company can afford that or not is a different question, but it seems they have a good grasp on where people who like to do these would be interested in Blue Apron, where those people are on the internet and in finding those people. That's all good things. And yeah. I think shows a sign of potential. The issue then is, when do you need to really capitalize on that potential when you're a publicly traded company? And going back to, I think you described that as a mistimed IPO, you know, is the pressure of having, you know, thousands and thousands of thousands of new shareholders maybe too much for them right now?
Yeah.
Company-wide realignment, what are we, if just a few months after the IPO, don't think is anything anyone would have liked to see.
No.
Prior to the IPO, if you would have said that we'd be in this situation. But yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe like Spin Zone is a good sign that management is recognizing
addressing
the need
issues.
To be. Yeah.
Yeah.
A management that desires and understands that they need to be profitable. I mean, they've got one thing going there, and then add into that the good things about the product, and maybe there's a turnaround in the future.
Yeah, sure.
Moving on now to, I don't think we did a very good job of keeping this a secret at the beginning of the show. I think everyone knows we're talking about Chipotle.
Your favorite company.
Yes.
Chipotle.
I'm a big, maybe we'll get into this more as we mention the food.
Okay, when did you last eat Chipotle?
Oh, probably, I think, a week ago to the day.
Oh, it's been a few months for me, I will admit.
Uh-oh, bad news. Going into the Q3 report, we have anecdotal evidence that sales are slowing down. I haven't been in a week, which is basically like 3 years, and Maddie hasn't been in months, so it's basically like they've lost a customer. But all jokes aside, we of course do talk about Chipotle quite a bit here on the show. Seemingly, we cannot escape Chipotle headlines. I think that might be my fault. Chipotle is slated to release its latest quarterly results after the closing bell next Tuesday. And as always, this earnings announcement will attract lots of investor attention. Certainly in my echo chamber, it is the most important thing happening on Tuesday. According to our latest Zacks consensus estimates, Chipotle is expected to post earnings of $1.69 per share and revenues of $1.14 billion, which would represent year-over-year growth rates of 114% and 10% respectively. Before we get too excited about that growth, we need to remember that 2016 was a year of desperation and scrambling to recover from that aforementioned food safety scandal, which really devastated same-store sales and profits. We've seen a lot of bounce back in 2017. We've seen those really solid year-over-year EPS growth rates, but that's softened year-over-year comparisons because of how rough 2016 was. We'll remember also that 2016, this quarter that we're discussing was part of, included the rollout of the Chiptopia Summer Rewards program, which was a costly marketing endeavor to get customers back in. So a lot of reasons why these year-over-year comparisons are so high. And while the recovery is certainly still on, it seems that analyst sentiment has softened as we've headed into the report. Over the last 6 days, we've actually seen 12 negative revisions for Chipotle's upcoming earnings estimates.
Just really don't like that queso.
Uh-uh.
I haven't tried it.
You haven't?
Did you try it?
Yeah, I have many times. We'll get to that in one second. this negative revision activity has sent our consensus estimate about 50 cents lower over that 60-day time frame, and this has all contributed to the stock's Zacks rank number 5 strong sell standing. We're also going to want to look at the stock's earnings ESP, which is our proprietary method of predicting earnings surprises. If you're unfamiliar with earnings ESP, it looks at the difference between the most recent estimates and all estimates that have ever come in for the quarter. The general idea there is that the most recent estimates are going to have the most information available, and those analysts are going to have a more accurate picture of company performance this quarter. We have a negative earnings ESP of 9.73% just days out of the report. That is not good as a translation. It means the recent estimates are significantly lower than our consensus estimates. Not a good sign. A strong sell stock with a negative earnings ESP headed into a report is one that we here at Zacks would typically avoid. However, I like the queso, to get back to your point. I like the queso, and it got a lot of flack online. I thought it was good queso. I don't know. Like, what do I have it to compare
to? Thing.
It's not the best queso in the world, obviously.
Well, I think, like, when I was seeing videos of people trying the queso,
yeah,
like, it definitely looked super grainy and, like, had, like, a lot of texture.
Yeah.
But I think that's because it didn't have any additives.
Sure.
Right? To make the cheese, like, to make it look like what you would consider normal queso.
Yeah, you're talking about Frito-Lay's, like, grocery aisle queso. That's, like, bright yellow. That color
that definitely
does not
has
exist.
Fake
that
yellow
doesn't exist
coloring.
In real
that,
life.
You know, that's definitely fake cheese. yeah, so this, like, of course it's going to look like that and have, like, because it's, like, real cheese, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can take them on their word for that.
Yeah. But that's what Chipotle is like mostly known for.
Real food, yeah.
Is real food and no hormones, you know, animals are raised well and stuff
that. This is why I love the company so much, is because I care so much about the quality of the food that I put in my body.
Yeah, good quality, as organic. You know. No, well, not organic, but like natural. That's the key word.
Yeah.
Those buzzwords.
To go back to my love for the brand as well, I just happen to think it tastes good, like really exceptionally good, and
I don't
never had a bad experience. So as we've talked about a few times, that food safety stuff was coming out a year and a half ago, really, is when we first, probably a little bit, almost 2 years ago now, is when we first started seeing headlines of it. And it just didn't shake me at all. I was like, I'm crunching numbers here, and I'm looking at number of people who eat at Chipotle versus number of people who got sick versus levels of enjoyment that I've had eating the food. And I'm just like, I think I'll just risk it. I'll give it my best shot. That personal anecdote, of course, did not extend to the wider, the wider audience. And it really was something that was devastating for Chipotle that, as mentioned, they're still recovering from. And I guess we'll see how that recovery is going. Maddie, you have a couple more estimates that our listeners should be ready for.
Yeah, so we also wanted to highlight a few estimates from our exclusive non-financial metrics estimate file. We talked about this last week as well. These estimates are updated daily and are based on the independent research of expert stock analysts, and you can find out more about them at zacks.com/non-financial metrics. So according to our exclusive NFM estimates, Chipotle is expected to be at 2,387 total restaurants this quarter, and that's up from 2,339 at the end of the previous quarter and signals a return of overall growth, but investors will also want to keep an eye on comparable restaurant sales once the report is released, of course.
Yeah. To bring us back to a report that we've already had, we saw Domino's Pizza last week in around the 8% comps growth range.
Yeah.
Lower.
Insane.
Yeah, lower than they have been over the past year or so, but still, we're talking about probably some of the best comps growth you'll see anywhere in the restaurant business right now. And Chipotle probably will not get to 8%. I mean, Domino's is unique.
Most
right now
restaurants don't.
Yeah, no. But you're going to be looking for, you're going to see a lot of pressure on Chipotle to see impressive comps growth. Although I think it is important just to highlight that new restaurants are opening. There was a stretch there where new restaurants weren't opening and you were seeing kind of a net loss in restaurants as they closed underperforming stores. That is a return to kind of like the bigger picture, long-term growth drivers. And I think that's a good thing for the company. But yeah, it's
maybe I'll just have to get Chipotle on Tuesday then.
To celebrate. I think it regardless. Should be a national holiday. But that's just me.
Well, their earnings report changes.
That's a good point, and it happens four times a year. So it's not a good idea once you really talk about it.
Since the food safety scandal like broke, I've been maybe, I think, less than five times. And I don't think it's because of the food safety scandal, but maybe like unconsciously.
You're the problem.
Because
you're
of the
problem.
Food safety scandal. But I do genuinely enjoy eating at Chipotle whenever I go to Chipotle. I do really like it.
We'll see how many people share that opinion on Tuesday.
But I just like don't go. But maybe it's because now that we have another really good restaurant right in our building.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That I always like go right down there for lunch.
Yeah, we're kind of spoiled.
Then
on
I
that
have
front.
To like walk to Chipotle.
Yeah, who likes that?
Who like
not
I'm
me.
Also such a lazy person.
So basically, to summarize there, if you're a bullish on Chipotle heading into the report and you also really care about personal anecdotes, like I'm sorry because Maddie is the exact customer that you're concerned about. Hopefully for the Chipotle bowls.
Now I kind of want Chipotle for dinner.
Maddie's... I want Chipotle for dinner every night. It's a battle of like, am I going to get it or am I going to... Is my willpower
here's also
win?
The thing. I'm really good at meal prepping. That's the thing I'm going to brag about myself. I'm a really good meal prepper.
And it all comes full circle because you have help sometimes with the meal kit deliveries of Flu April.
Absolutely. Bringing it back all the way around.
All right. I think that just about does it for us this week. As a reminder, everyone, if you feel we missed something or if you want us to cover something next week, feel free to shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. You can also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for joining us. We will see you next time on the Zacks Friday Finish Line.